Dave Alex.
Hi, Dave.
Finally started to talk, so I'm sitting back in this chair, so comfy, and I'm really tired, and I just want to zone out. I could just quite easily sit back here and go, my story's the same as May's, thank you very much. And it was, she said so many situations in there, what I thought I can relate to, because, the insanity and the madness of addiction. That's why we're all in this room. We can relate to each other. We can identify. I'm quite a few years in now. My life's really different today. I've just finished an hard week at work. I'm tired. Most days I am tired. And it's a joy to actually get up and go to work today, to have that peace of mind and keep my head clear from consequences. And it's nice to be here. I think I've done a 40-minute chair here when I was 5 years, and I think you asked me to do it, Mick. And it's just strange, he's walked in tonight and he's in this meeting. And he's come in with a pal of mine, Johnny. We've done loads of using together. We used to be in the nick together. He had the nickname, the Bisto Kid, because if there was a bit of gear on the wing, he would find it, And I just used to follow him. The cell doors opened, and I'd be on John's arse, you know what I mean? Because I know he'd find a bag of gear. And I just think, sweet. And so it's quite funny, though, sitting in here, we're all in on a Friday night, in a meet of Narcotics Anonymous. It's fantastic. And I've just had a fantastic weekend away with my wife and the four kids, their partners, grandchild, down in Dorset, and we've done a lot of travelling, loads of beautiful food and different restaurants, and the weather was nice, and I was just sort of saying to Dean and May that's the joys I get out of recovery today, because they're all the areas in life what I've really, really seriously messed up on, and to have made them amends and be part of the family now, and be reliable, be responsible, be loving, be caring, that gear, it should come natural to a father or to an adult or to a human being, but it didn't come natural to me. It didn't come natural, and thank God, working through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, he's helped me understand that stuff and not rip myself apart, and to have that faith in this program and in myself that I can make the amends and put things right. It ain't all been joyous and free, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here tonight. My life started off with a lot of violence, a lot of chaos. My old man, was a proper C-U-N-T. And even to this day, multiple years in recovery, I won't be losing no tears when he passes. You know what I mean? He was just that type of person. Don't mean nothing to me. My mum was getting beaten a lot, and I had so many anger issues from early days. Didn't understand why. Similar to what Mae was saying with her feelings. I was too young to understand. All I knew is I wanted to get out, act out, play up, get in trouble, and just get on the streets and do my thing in my own time. And that's what I've done, without giving you the spill of everything, suspensions, getting expelled, and da-da-da, headmasters, getting my mum in front of the teachers. And, when I finally got expelled about 13, I knew then I was being set free, because my education was going to be on the streets, and that's what I've done. My pals were the same. I'll give you an example. We went to a special school, and I tell some people some days about this stuff. It was a room, say, similar to this, and they had a Zulu spear and two big shield and two big spears on one wall. And we wanted the teacher to take us to McDonald's one day. And he said, we had to take you to McDonald's, whatever he said. So we pulled knives out, tied them to a wall, put them up against this wall, got the spears off, running down the corridor, throwing them, and now we could have went straight through his fucking heart. But it weren't. They was going in the wall, and we thought it was funny. He was crying, and we said, "You're going to take us to McDonald's?" And then we got him to open the safe up, get money out, take us to McDonald's. We was about 14, 13, or 12. I can't remember now, but there was multiple chaotic times like that at a really young age, we just thought it was a load of fun. Didn't think about the consequences, or didn't think about other people's feelings, and that's how my life went on. It went into the criminal world. A couple of my mates early doors started taking a bit of brand in that, and then sometimes I'd see them out and that, whatever, didn't take a lot of notice. We was out, and the other half of us was out just getting a few quid, wanting the cars, the girls, the clubs and the clothes, da 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 da. And the crime sort of like got more serious. And then I'd see some of these kids who I grew up with. Fuck, some days they're clucking. I didn't understand it all then. And I used to think, what are you doing? Taking a, you know, a drug, what fuck it makes you look like that? Are you stupid or something? You know, and I couldn't get my head around it. You know, so anyway, the years went on, and I started having this fantastic life. You know, met someone I wanted to marry, and we was going to get an house and have kids and live happily ever after. I had this plan. By the time I was 25, I was going to be absolutely sorted, and obviously most plans don't go to sort of a schedule, and I went out on a bit of graft. I got into like robberies really early, and went out on a bit of graft one day just outside of London, expecting to be back a couple of hours later, and it went totally tits up. I ended up getting shot 5 times, got 15 in the nick, and you know, I was supposed to be getting married 6 months before this, and you know, also like the wedding plans got cancelled when my girlfriend was pregnant, and also I'm sitting in the nick, never done a day in my life. And I remember him saying to me, I went to Brixton, and I was in, I've got bandages everywhere, 5 days later, I've got my arm all fucked, and they said you've got to go on the hospital wing in Brixton. So my only experience with an hospital is nurses, a ward, and really being catered for. And then I went into Brixton, a couple of geezers in white fucking jackets come out. And I don't know if anyone knows it in here, but it's called Fraggle Rock, you know, in Brixton. And they put me on this gaff. It was disgusting, right? And I thought, how the fuck can you put a human being in this cell? You know, because we was category A's, we was on our own and had a little piss pot. I thought, I can't live like this, you know what I mean? I was fucking used to having sort of being reasonably spoilt. And also, I like to get my head around this, and this was going to be my life now. And then I got around that. I'm not going to bore you with all the years in the prisons and that. I was young, I was full of beans, and it went pretty fast. It was near the end of that sentence, probably about 6-7 years into it, and heroin coming to the jails. We was all puffheads, and all of a sudden, that coming to the jails, I didn't realise then, and my life become unmanageable, and I was totally powerless over heroin. Well, I always used to have a bit of puff, phone cards, tobacco, all of a sudden that stuff's all gone. And also, I'm selling my canteen 5 times for that Wednesday, and then when people were coming for their canteen, it's already gone, and you know, all the consequences. Anyway, so I got out of the prison for that. Didn't think nothing of it and that, and got home, and then we started doing the stuff we used to do out there, not robberies, we were doing other things, we were selling sort of drugs. And what happened was, fast forwarding the tape, you know, my wife sort of, we got married in the nick, and she visited me every week, every fortnight, for 9 years, and I was probably out about 6 months, and washed up a bit of Charlie one day to see the quality of it and that, and I just thought it would be a good idea to someone to make the pipe up for me, because I've got this fantastic life, and on the odd weekend I can go and have a bit of time with whoever and smoke a bit of fucking crack in an hotel room. That was every Saturday night, every now and then it was every sort of fortnight, then it was every week, and then it was like a Saturday, Sunday, then slipping in the Monday. Anyway, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm bang on it, don't even realise the consequences are coming. And I remember my wife said to me, she went, Dave, she's up, really upset. And she's gone to me, I need to talk to you. I said, what's the matter, babe? She went, you're going missing for days on end. And da 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 da. She went, are you having an affair? I went, don't be silly, babe, I'm fucking faithful. I said, no. I said, I'm smoking crack. You know, like she's going to go, oh, thank fuck for that. You know what I mean? And that was my thing. And I just thought, you're sitting there being unfaithful. Of course not. You know what I mean? Anyway, so, and then the insanity sort of started and that with it then. The first few years was fine. I had a few quid, but, you know, I was smoking crack 24-7. Bum, 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 bum. And all of a sudden, all the things what people said, you want to be careful, you might start doing, I didn't think for 1 second I'd do. Because I thought I had morals, I had standards, I had principles, I had people I loved and cared for, etc., etc. And all of a sudden, when the dough started running out, and then I started selling cars, selling watches, selling fucking videos from indoors in the house. And I remember we had a couple of videos in the different bedrooms and that, and I mean, I was desperate, so desperate one day. Everything's gone. I'm probably 4 or 5 years into using, and ain't living at home. And I've got a video of my oldest daughter. Right, she's probably about 12 or something then. I went, Daddy, where are you going with the video? I said, oh, I've just got to go and borrow it to someone. I'm going to come back. And she had tears in her eyes. And my wife was standing there going, what are you doing? And do you know what? I felt like a dog. I was a dog. I felt so much guilt and so much shame. But the power of addiction to go and get another pipe was overpowering. You know, I had no power whatsoever at this stage. And I mean, I went and sold it, and I'd done a few things like that. You know, it's only a few, you know, working through these steps and owning this sort of stuff that I realised, you know, where the depths of addiction took me. You know, all these morals and principles and values I believed I had, every single one of them went out the window, you know, and I smoked everything, and not just financial, the materialistic stuff. You know, my marriage, she threatened me time after time that she was going to divorce me. And I just carried on going and going and going. And I used to go on mad, insane benders. And I often share about this. I went on a bender once and I had these Timberlands on. And it went on, I don't know, I think it was something like 10 days. I was hallucinating. I had such bad psychosis at this time because it was just insane. I remember going home, I thought, please let me in. I need to sleep. I ain't slept. Please, please, just let me in. And I remember taking the Timberlands off. And as I've took the right boot off and peeled my sock off, my fucking toenails come off in the sock because they were so wet and gooey where for so many days I've been fucking just sweating, piping, marching, like, and that goes. And I didn't think, no, what am I fucking doing to myself? I just thought, if you go on a bender, wear trainers. You know what I mean? Don't ever wear Timberlands. Don't ever wear Timberlands. You know, and that is the insanity of my denial to justify where I can continue. I didn't think for once, you know, what am I doing? And so you know, my step two is full of stuff like that. You know, it's saying in there, step two in there, something about you. You oughtn't go up to a doctor and ask him for an heart attack or something like that. And I thought, well, I actually did. Because I remember on the height of my psychosis, for some reason, I was in the crowd and I just wanted to go and have a fucking get run over. I really thought, I can't want to get run over. It felt better than having sex. I just wanted to get knocked up in the air. And I remember going down to this road, jumped out once or twice. The cars have swerved me. I'm getting more angry and more angry. And then I'll get the last car, I'll give it no time at all. Smack me up in the air. I've done all my ribs and I've done all sorts of gear. And I felt fantastic. You know, that was where I was with the madness of crack. Everyone was in my story. But, nice one, Dan, because I went to put the clock on and I totally forgot. Everyone was in my story, but I was a major raging fucking crackhead. Simple as that, you know what I mean? I'd go to any lengths. All the things I said I wouldn't do, I started to do. I remember at first, I used to get people, I'd give them like a couple of stones, I'd park in my car, a couple of streets away from King's Cross, go down there, go and get me X amount. If you fucking don't come back, if I see you, I'll kill you, or I'll never treat you again. I'll wait here, you know, really wanting to be low profile and out of the way. But that all changed. In the end, I'm down King's Cross, not giving a, you know, crap, and right in the mix of it all. And I ain't gonna bother telling you stories because where I've come so far in my recovery, so many stories I think you're gonna think I'm fucking lying. Because they're so mental. You know what I mean? Things are dumb. But it ain't, it's true. But, you know, how I didn't get lifed off or killed, I don't know. Because I put my life on the line daily, going through crack ass doors. And then, like, 2 days later, after I've really put some dealers through hell. I'm so desperate for a pipe, I go back in there unarmed, putting my life on the line, thinking, long as I can just suck the smoking and that feeling of, you know, that fucking totally out of your head, then I don't mind getting a bullet in your head, long as I can just have a pipe. And, you know, that insanity continued for a long time. Until in the end, I had no courage left, I had no fight left, I had no love left, I just had guilt, shame, remorse, I couldn't look in the mirror. I felt disgusted with myself. My wife, if she bumped into me, because a lot of my using was done pretty local, would grab the kids and go across the road because she was disgusted with me. Everyone I knew, I harmed physically, mentally or emotionally, you know, down to family, down to people I knew in pubs, associates, not just friends, stallholders. I harassed everyone. I begged, borrowed and stealed off everyone, you know, just I really ruined myself and everyone who I knew. It was disgusting. And then I got to this stage where I remember being just around King's Cross, and I remember I was clucking, I was dirty, I was hungry, I was lonely. And just before this moment, the only place I could go was in this squatter's house with two dogs that used to shit on the floor. And he left me. He fucking left me. That's how bad I was. And also, I went back to the house and I thought, he's fucking gone. The squatter is gone. And I thought, fucking hell, mate. I can't even own that one. You know what I mean? You know, and this is from someone who had a right few quid, had everything, I was married, you know, da da da. I fucked things up, basically. Fucked things up. And then and I couldn't stay in there because the shit smell overpowered me. And I was... yeah, and I was stood there and I just remember looking up thinking, if there is any form of God out there, you know, please help me. Please help me. And unknowingly, he was helping me already because... I must have had an iPad with me because the situations I put myself through multiple times and come out, you know, I did get some serious injuries. I got shot in the nut. I got stabbed a few times, you know, I give as good as I've got. But somehow, some way, I just kept pulling through and nothing was stopping me. Nothing was stopping me. The power of, you know, addiction kept me going and going and going and going and going. And then I got to this stage where I looked up and I was beaten. All of a sudden I realised I had no courage to go on. I had no courage. All the fight was gone. I was exhausted. And it's gone on for, you know, first few years are okay because I had a few quid. But once all that went, you know, and it was running into the likes of Iceland's before the security got on just to try and get three lumps of meat to sell to the old grannies for a tenner just to go and have a use up. Or on my last relapse, I was clucking more than I was using because I had no courage to go out. I didn't mind doing crashes or this and that, fucking whatever I had to do to score, I would do it, but I couldn't do none of that no more. And I come in a really lonely, vulnerable, fearful place. And I went to a detox centre multiple times, and cause I tried treatment in detox centres and a bit of self-will would kick back in and I just marched back off. As soon as I got a little bit of clean time, I was off and running again. And I knocked on the door and I knew this woman. She was about 9 years clean. And I said to her, I went, Sam, I said, I'm really, really ill. Please buy me a tenner. You know? She went, Dave, you've come to my workplace. It's a detox centre. You're asking me for a tenner. I said, I know. I'd never do it again, but please give me a tenner. You know what it's like, that desperation. And she started crying. She went, Dave, you're going to die. And for the first time, so many people said that to me. And I used to think, I fucking ain't. But this time I thought, I am. I knew I was going to die. I had no fight left. You know, I went through so much, physically, mentally and spiritually. I was empty. And what it was, the so-called courageous geezer who didn't give a shit about his life just to find, you know, ways and means to get more, was now really vulnerable, really frightened, really lonely, really isolated, and didn't know what to do. But thank God I touched in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous before. And fast forward the tape a little bit, I end up seeing a family member, asked them for some 100 quid to go and see a private doctor and get a script out, and I've done that. Somehow I've done it without using, because I couldn't, if I used a tenner, I couldn't afford to do what I just said. And then I went to over one of my family's houses outside London, done a 10-day detox. I hit CA at first because I was outside London, and I knew it wasn't for me. I ain't knocking it, you know, all things for causes. But it was the local ones, and it served its purpose for 3 months. Went through 1 to 12 really lively. You know, and as you do, I call it microwave recovery, but that's just my opinion. But I knew I needed to get back into London and to get to Narcotics Anonymous, because I knew the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous were a lot more thorough and a lot more deep. And that's what I need. Not everyone does need that, so I'm not knocking it. Whatever works for you works. But you know, I'm really stubborn and I'm really off key with or without drugs, and I needed something quite in depth to sort of help me find some clarity in life. So I come back to the meetings, and what attracted me with my with the sponsor I've got today, who I first originally asked nearly 13 years ago, is he was in a meeting sharing, just had a relationship breakup, and he shed his tears in the meeting. It's the first time I've seen a grown man share in a meeting like we are tonight, and sharing emotional stuff. Where I'd normally judge someone like that and think, what are you doing? You know what I mean? And I'd never be honest with that stuff myself. I knew if I wanted to make changes and progress in recovery and make them changes in my life, that I actually respected that night. I thought, that's power and that's courage, because I ain't got the courage to do that. I've got the courage to rant and rave, yeah, fuck you. But not that, not to own how I feel, because I suppose I can't even really own it, because I don't even know how I feel at this particular time. And I approached him after the meeting, and I said, you know, would you sponsor me? And he said, you know what? He said, I've heard about you. He said, I know your reputation. He said, you've actually freaked me out asking me. He said, can I give you an answer tomorrow? And I thought, I've changed. You know, and I changed, but you know, a lot of people, every time I was there, they go, oh, fuck me, my God, oh, my God. You know, but I then changed, and he came back to me, he said, yeah, and you know, and he's soft, he's kind, you know, not everyone thinks the same, this is my opinion, and in small sentences, he can give me a really good bit of guidance and education in life, and you know, we've gone through the steps a couple of times, and I was just saying to May about when we went through, I was just on my first step three, and a couple of things happened on my three, and I remember there's two questions in there, one's about how your life was on your will, and then the other question is how your life is on God's will. And I just felt like this tingling feeling go through. It was like out with the old and in with the new. Something changed, and I just knew it was one of them spiritual experiences, which I've had quite a lot of in recovery, which was that on that path of setting me free. You know, and he was encouraging me and giving me incentive to sort of continue with his program. And, you know, I've got quite a lot of good experiences around the steps, and I'm a strong believer in them. I don't believe in, you know, hanging around, taking months and forever to get through a step. If I've got sponsees, I encourage them to get through them. You know, take your time in the sense so you understand them, but just get through them. Because there's people I know, same clean time as me, and they haven't even gone through 12 yet. They're probably only on 6 or 7. But like I said, again, everyone's got their own opinions and how they work with things. That's just my opinion, and what works for me is to just get on with it. And, you know, I've gone through them a couple of times, and you know, and I find the steps invaluable. And I've always tried to always maintain my meeting attendance. Early days, I've done a lot more, because I didn't have a lot to do in my life. It was hitting the gym and hitting meetings and tea shops and getting my first phone and things like getting texts and getting little messages and, you know, people saying, do you want to go for a coffee and come to a meeting? And that gear blew me away early days, because I was so isolated and so alone for so many years, and no one wanted to associate with me, even squats. It made me feel nice. It made me feel like part of again. It made me feel like I had like something in life to get up for and achieve. So going to gym, going to meetings and, you know, getting them little texts off of people and a bit of encouragement and a bit of guidance. You know, I started to feel the power in this program at a very early stage. And I would say that I truly surrendered this time round, because what I realised for myself, which I didn't understand at first, was putting down the drugs for me was just the first stage. You know, because I put down drugs a few times before I can continue certain behaviours. And before I knew it, I was back in a fucking crack house or down the West End here, 11 o'clock at night, trying to score. And then using on these streets down here. And I had my last sort of 10 months of using, a lot of it was down here, and it was fucking hell. As I'm getting out there. Yeah, I've got lost of track there. Yeah, so I forgot, Joe. I totally forgot where I was. Can anyone remind me? Where was I at then? Oh yeah, it's a nice one, mate. Yeah, my last relapse, and it was hell there. And that's what reminds me of why I truly surrendered to this program, because I realised then, you know, putting down the drugs was just the first stage. It was about changing my behaviours, and that's where I needed the sponsor and the steps to help, and you guys, you know, in the regular tense of meetings, to start making that change in life. And for the first time, I wanted to change. I didn't want to be Dave, we've done this and done that and whatever, and all them masks what I had as I was going through my addiction and that, and, you know, my morals and standards was changing, depending where I was, who I was with, is what mask I had on. I just got lost. I didn't know myself no more. And I didn't even know what I wanted. And in recovery, I started to realise I just wanted a normal, peaceful life, whatever that was, because I've never had one before. You know, even before drugs, what I realised as I was going through the work and in my recovery process is that I never had peace of mind, never had a clear conscience, even before, because drugs didn't come into my life until I was about 29. I was so engrossed in quite serious crime that the door could come through or I could go missing on a daily basis at any time, for any reason, things could happen. And for me today, I can't put a price on peace of mind, you know, and having that clear conscience. And that's something I'm really trying to aspire to on a daily basis, is work these principles, because it was when I first got my first job for a family member who I'm still with now, because I don't know if I'd even have a job if it weren't for him, because I ain't got no sort of skills in that. And I tried college first couple of years, it really weren't for me, you know, crossing the I's and dotting the T's, it just doesn't work for me. And anyway, he gave me a job in a waste disposal yard, driving machinery and that, and then he sort of up my wages, made me a foreman, and I didn't even really know what I was doing. And it was such a hectic, chaotic, environment with lorry drivers, skip drivers, van drivers all coming in, weighing them, getting them out, money. You know, it's a bit mad there. And my defects come right up, because they're all ex-criminals who own this, and they was telling me about fucking this, fucking get that here, get me here. And I bought into it, and all of a sudden, all old behaviour, as soon as I drove in there on the yard, I was just rife with defects, just nasty and mad. And I'd be driving home like a lunatic, 6-7 years clean. And then I had a serious consequence of that going into it, you know, because I was jumping lights, I was bipping people out of the way, I was forcing people out of the way, because I'd just been up for 11 hours, 12 hours to get home, I just want to get in, get out of my way type of thing, da-da-da-da-da, road rage all the way. And this went on for a couple of years, and also I had this consequence. Thank God, you know, I didn't have, you know, no severe consequence out of it, it was just a possibility of it. And also, it got me thinking. I thought, oh, I'm 7-8 years clean. What the fuck? What did I just do there? And how have I been behaving lately? And then I realised the spiritual principles weren't applying for me when I was at work. I was on my way home. I was only applying them really in the meeting. And I just got lost. I didn't realise, because I weren't committing crime and I was actually getting up to go and earn a living, that everything was fine. You know, and that's what got me to get back to my step 10. You know, and I've got a few apps on there. I've got a gratitude list. I've got a Bible app. I ain't religious, but I do believe in God. That's just my opinion, you know, and I've got my higher power. There's a couple of little apps you can get on there. It's just like a just for today reading, really. You know what I mean? Something positive, something kind, something loving. In that sort of stuff, I have to nurture myself with it, because it doesn't come natural to me to be loving, kind, caring and considerate and thoughtful and patient. All the spiritual principles what this program, you know, suggests we apply. Some people can obviously get on it a lot easier than others, and it's also, of course, it's different areas of the program. But for me, I've had to really battle to get that one. Even though I want it, it doesn't come without me putting the effort in action in and putting my, you know, on my daily prayers, asking the God of my understanding to, you know, give me the guidance to be spiritual, loving and caring today, and not aggressive, you know, in you know, road rage and all the defects what I thought I'd come up. And you know what, since I've done that, the strangest thing is when I started taking my time coming home from work, stopping at the red light, letting someone go. Not let people take the piss, but let one out and then go. No, not being too kind. And I was getting home at the same time. And I thought, oh my God, I'm getting home at 10 to 6. I thought I was nicking half hour, you know, driving like a nutcase. And And it just goes to show you, you know, the more you try and take control, the less control you've got. And we hear it said in these meetings, and, you know, and I have it with, like, that same sort of situation in meetings, when I should be a secretary in different meetings, that control issue. And when I take a back seat and just do literature or tea, I just find it so much more peaceful, because my head don't switch off sometimes, and I want my opinion to be heard, you know, and whatever. I think, yeah, that's the best idea. You know what I mean? And to not have that going on, that ego going on today, you know, it really does float. It really does float my boat. Have I got 30 or 40, Dean? What are we doing?
Whatever you're comfortable.
Yeah, and you know, and I find, for me, taking the back seat, having that little bit more humility today, you know, it really does achieve a lot for me. I had a friend. That girl at the detox centre. She had a friend, and when she helped me clean up. She sort of stepped 12 me. Her friend become my friend. Then we sort of become boyfriend, girlfriend. Then we got engaged, you know, and then 11 years later last year, we got married, you know, and that's been a fantastic journey for me. That, you know, I ain't saying it works for everyone, but, you know, I just think whatever happens in your recovery, when it works, it works. And she's really been a big support to me, and, you know, just invaluable as my friends in recovery and these meetings are. Because she don't suffer my shit. I didn't realise my first wife, she was beautiful when she was soft, and I loved her. But because she was soft, I took the piss. You know what I mean? I abused that kindness by getting my self-will in control issues going and getting my own way. And where my wife are today, she won't suffer that at all. She is in my face live. She really does let me know. She ain't in recovery, but she might as well be, because she can twist me round with words, you know what I mean? And I'm saying to me, you know, she don't let me get away with it. And that's what I need. I need to be told, you know what I mean, when I'm going wrong. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't need to be told as much these days, because I'm fully aware of it. With my, as the years have gone on, my conscience has got, like, a lot more narrower, and there's a lot of things I used to think was nothing, grey areas, no big deal. Today, my conscience won't let me get away with them, because I know it's wrong, and I'm trying to aspire to, you know, to do the best job possible. You know, and our honeymoon, we saved up hard, both our holiday sort of bucket list top priority goal was to go around Africa and South Africa and do a safari and go and see Victoria Falls up Zimbabwe and that, da 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 da. And we done it. Done it in recovery, you know. And we was looking at some of the photos the other day, and we were sitting in, like, a Jeep in, like, Sabi Sands, this near Kruger National Park, with a leopard in a tree, with a kill and a lion pride, and, you know, and we were sitting down by these waters, and a big elephant herd come past us, right past us, virtually touched us and marched across the river. Where I've watched wildlife over the years and seen this gear, to actually think, wow, I'm sitting here, me and my wife are sitting here in South Africa on a safari, you know what I mean, X amount of years clean, married. And, you know, it's them joys will absolutely blow me away, you know, because we've worked hard to achieve it. And, you know, I remember, like, when I first sort of cleaned up and started going to work, I wanted to get a new microwave. It was only 50 quid, but I had no money. So, sorry, I weren't working then. And I went to buy it myself, and I put £10 away a fortnight at me benefits. And then I had the 50 quid. Because she had a big white one when I first moved in with her, and I wanted to get a little silver one. And I got this little microwave, and I remember sitting in the chair, like I say, it's over there. And see, I fucking like that microwave. You know what I mean? I really admired and valued this microwave, because I had to save for it. Now, it weren't easy come, easy go, like most things in my life have been. And that's what's been my journey in recovery, to value things. You know, I value my clean time today. And I've gone through a couple of difficult times. Me and my wife ended up did getting back together, but we split up down to my behaviour for about a month. It felt like, you know, years at the time. I lost my younger brother to this disease when I was 18 months clean. And on all these situations, that's when I've embraced my higher power more than anywhere, when I know it's there, because no matter what, I'm never alone today. And, you know, and I've come in these rooms and shed tears, then go out there and act out and fall short and use, because I don't want to go out and that. And, you know, I know there's people in this room, there's a lady I heard share years ago, I ain't going to point or say anything, And she said something about a loss. It brought me to tears because I thought, if you've stayed clean through that, that is so powerful. You know, and I know today you don't need to use no matter what. And you know, I've got my own experiences of grief, loss, sadness, pain. And I've not used because I do value my clean time. You know? And today I know I'm not going to use, and I've got a lot of faith that I won't use tomorrow because I don't want to use. I've made them changes today. You know, I've got so many values, things I really do appreciate in my life. I don't take no one for granted. I don't try my best not to take none of you for granted. My wife, my kids, we've got like a WhatsApp group. And, you know, because I lost out a lot as a father. You know, my first child was 9 years of age before I even see her on the street because of my criminal behaviour. And, you know, and I lost a lot of years with both of them. And, you know, and I've made amends to my oldest one. I only made amends to her on the loss of my brother. She reached out to me. Because her mum said that could have been your dad. But, you know, it's sad it's your uncle, but it could have been your dad. And then she reached out and I managed to sit down in a restaurant across the table to a 21-year-old daughter who I didn't know, and made amends, made a formal amends, which I actually meant from the bottom of my heart that I, you know, as a dad and a father, I want to try and put that right and be reliable and be responsible today. And, you know, it took you know, a couple of years to get to that stage, but I got there. And, you know, I've made multiple amends, all different types, you know, physical ones, financial ones, and emotional ones. And some of them have been really tough, because I had to do one amends where I had to separate me injuring someone, but then one of their family injured me. So I always had a resentment, didn't look at my part there, it was what happened to me. And then I chose to make that amends there, and I had to just separate what happened to me to what I'd done to them. And just when I made the amends, totally block out what I had done. And, you know, and all that sort of stuff is what's really set me free in my journey of recovery. And because I'm going to sort of end here because I'm near sort of my time. But I spent 3/4 of my life in jail. And freedom to me was just being outside of jail. But today it's so much more than that. Because that's the physical side of it. You know, I've got the spiritual side of it today, where with my spirit, I set myself free by going to do things what I like to do, like peaceful, loving acts to myself, which could be esteem, could be in the gym, could be a cycle ride, a nice long walk with my dog or with my wife, you know, going over parks, walking through it, and actually sitting down on park benches, really admiring the greenery and flowers. I know it sounds all upsy daisy, but you know, that's where I'm coming from today. That's the gear I value. You know, walking along a river and going away weekends, and you know, on a WhatsApp group with the family, we have days out. We go whitewater rafting, crazy golf, top golf, go karting. You know, whatever it is. You know, and that gear is invaluable to me today. And all that's just down to working this program, having a sponsor, working the steps, being the service, helping newcomers. And also, you know, how to ask for help when I need help, because it might be multiple years clean. There's still times when I sort of need help, as we all do, and we just bounce off each other. And I value this more than anything. And, you know, and I know my family do it all, because, you know, I've made a lot of amends and created a really good life. And I enjoy every moment I possibly can while I'm in recovery, because I lost a lot of years. But today, every day's a joy. Best of my ability, anyway. I'll leave it there, thanks.